I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, I wanted to tie together some concepts that are very interrelated but are not often tied together. I think it'll help understand some of the history of religion and how the Bible ties into some of the earliest known documents. The earliest writing in the world is part of the ancient Egyptian temple complexes that have been unearthed in Egypt. They have on the inside of them ancient writing known, of course, as hieroglyphics. The ancient Egyptians believed that their language and writing were invented by God. The very word hieroglyphics means God's words. Hieroglyphics is not obviously an Egyptian term. It is a term that comes to us from Greek, from the Greek Hierios, meaning gods, and glypho, meaning inscriptions. And so, Hierios, glypho, literally means God's inscriptions or God's writing. Latter-day Saints have a similar point of view. Moses chapter 6, verses 5 and 6 tell us that the very first writing was given to people by God. Listen to what Moses chapter 6, verses 5 through 6 say. Quote, "And a book of remembrance was kept, in the which was recorded in the language of Adam, for it was given unto as many as called upon God to write by the spirit of inspiration." So as many as called on God, it was given to them to write. The next verse, verse 6 says, quote, "And by them their children were taught to read and write, having a language which was pure and undefiled," close quote. Language came from God. According to the Egyptians and the Book of Moses of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the earliest known Hebrew writings is fascinating to me. We know, of course, that Hebrew was written earlier, but the earliest known writing of the Bible that has come down to us is Numbers chapter 6, verses 24 through 26. It's part of an amulet or a wristband might be a better way to say it. It was found at a place in Israel in a dig, an archaeological dig, called Ketef Hinnom. And here's what this Jewish wristband said. Remember, somebody had this around their wrist about 850 BC. Quote, "May the Lord bless you and take care of you. May the Lord be kind and gracious to you. May the Lord look on you with favor and give you peace," close quote. It reads very much the way that Numbers chapter 6, verses 24 through 26 would read today. The Old Testament is something that is near and dear to Jews, but also to Christians. The earliest known versions of it, except for the one that I just read that was found at Ketef Hinnom, are part of the Dead Sea Scrolls translations. The Dead Sea Scrolls were, of course, discovered between 1947 and 56, by a number of people. They were put in caves for safekeeping on the northeast corner of the Dead Sea. There are some fascinating things about the Dead Sea Scrolls, although this is somewhat disputed because, as you might imagine, certain parts of the scholarly community and the Jewish community don't care for this translation. But 4Q285, meaning from Cave 4 at Qumran, document number 285, as translated by Professors Michael Wise, then of University of Chicago, and Robert Eisenman of Cal State University at Long Beach, translated 4Q285, which is now called the Pierced Messiah text, as saying that the Messiah or leader of the branch of David will be judged and then pierced and wounded to death, and then he will be triumphant. The gist of it is that it sounds like something very close to, or perhaps the same as, the narrative that Christians have about Jesus. And again, this is 50 BC, before the time of Christ. There are some other fascinating things about the Dead Sea Scrolls that fit in with Latter-day Saint belief. Of course, if you could go back in time somehow and live amongst the Dead Sea Scrolls community and understand what they were saying, many of the things that they taught and did would sound foreign to current Christians and specifically to the LDS community, but some things would sound very familiar. For example, they called themselves the, quote, Latter-day Saints. This is according to George Moline, who wrote a book on the Dead Sea Scrolls. It was published by Herald House in 1954. And the reason that the Dead Sea Scrolls community are not commonly called the Latter-day Saints is because that would be confusing. They're just called the Dead Sea Scrolls community. They, of course, did not believe that they were in the very last days. They believed they were in the last days before the first coming of the Messiah. There are other fascinating aspects that tie in with LDS thought. First of all, the Dead Sea Scrolls community had many scriptures that are not found in the Bible. Latter-day Saints have the Doctrine and Covenants, Pearl of Great Price, Book of Mormon, all of which are not found in the Bible. The Dead Sea Scrolls community also hid their records away for safekeeping. Joseph Smith described the angel Moroni as hiding golden plates upon which their ancient record was kept in a stone box in upstate New York after transporting them there. And the Dead Sea Scrolls describe or prove that the ancient Qumran community had writings that were important to them, which they hid away in these caves, which were a small distance from their community on the northwest corner of the Dead Sea. There, for safekeeping, they stood, or were kept, rather, until 1947. The Dead Sea Scrolls were placed for safekeeping probably about 68 AD, give or take a few years. One of the other fascinating parts about the Dead Sea Scrolls is that in Cave 11 of the Qumran Scrolls, 19TA, we have this description of a temple to be built in the future. Fascinating. Latter-day Saints also believe that many temples will be built in the future. All right, enough about the Old Testament times. When we come back, let's talk about the New Testament, where it came from, because there are many misconceptions about this. Let's also talk a bit about how the Christian beliefs have changed a bit over time, as is easy to be shown by different ancient texts. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you have any questions or comments about this program or any other program, feel free to send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. I'll be happy to respond. We'll be right back.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Our discussion today centers around how the earliest known documents, the earliest known writing, was actually on ancient Egyptian temple walls by ancient Egyptians. This dates to nearly 4,000 BC, and they were called, or at least the writing was called and is called now, hieroglyphics, meaning God's words. The ancient Egyptians believed that God gave them writing. Latter-day Saints believe a similar thing, as mentioned in Moses chapter 6, verses 5 and 6. Now on to the New Testament. People who look at the New Testament just kind of assume that it's in chronological order. Matthew must have been written first, then next Mark, then Luke, and finally John. But that's not the case. Paul's letters were written before any of the Gospels. Traditionally, Paul's letters, and we know this by the writing style in some of the earliest known manuscripts, that Paul's letters were written about 40 to 45 AD, give or take a little bit. They were, of course, written by Paul, who had been converted on the road to Damascus. He decided that he wanted to take Jesus' admonition to spread the gospel personally. And of course, he went around and established many different branches of the early Christian faith. After he left, of course, no TV, no radio, no cell phones. What he did was, when he heard about issues or problems in the church, or about how they were doing by courier or messenger who brought him letters, he would then write a letter and send it back by return courier or messenger to the churches. These were considered valuable by each of these churches, who made copies and circulated them amongst all of the other early Christian churches. Hence, Paul's letters became the earliest known writings that were considered sacred texts, after, of course, the Old Testament, by the newly formed Christian faith. After Paul's letters, then we come to the first gospel, the book of Mark. That's probably written shortly after Paul's letters, probably in about 50 AD. It was written by a young man named John Mark. Notice his first name, John, is a Hebrew, a Jewish name. His last name, Mark or Marcus, would have been a Greek name. And the idea is, that's been brought down to us by Christian tradition, is that John Mark had a Jewish mother and a Greek father, and that he became Peter's young missionary companion. Why? Because Peter spoke Aramaic, a form of Hebrew, but probably wasn't so fabulous at Greek. And so having a young man who was really very bilingual was useful. You can read a bit about where the foundation of this idea came from in Acts chapter 12, verse 12. We have a reference to John Mark also in Acts 12, 25, Acts 13, 5, and so on. Luke, the Gospel of Luke, was probably written shortly after Mark in about 65 AD. It was written by, according to tradition, Paul's physician, who was a highly educated, well-traveled, and extremely gifted writer. We learn about him in Colossians chapter 4, verse 14. He also wrote Acts, which was a sequel to the Gospel of Luke. It's one of the most carefully composed and spectacularly written books of the New Testament. It also borrows extensively from the book of Mark, even though it's much, much longer. It copies word for word most of Mark and then adds additional details and information that Mark does not have. After Luke, probably about 70 AD or so, the Gospel of Matthew was written. By tradition, written by the Apostle Matthew, he wrote it particularly to show Jesus' genealogy and his miracles. This particular gospel, although different from Luke, also borrows extensively, word for word, from Mark. Hence, it's pretty easy to see that Mark was first, Luke probably second, based also on the writing style and the earliest known manuscripts, and then Matthew would have been the third gospel written. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the synoptic gospels because they are synonymous in many ways. The Gospel of John would have been the last of the four gospels written in about 80 AD. It was written in a very different way from the other three. By tradition, written by John the Apostle, for the purpose of converting Greeks and other Gentiles to the church. Hence, it has ways of describing things and accounts that would have special appeal to Greeks to make them converts. The Gospel of John begins with this idea about the Word and the Word being God and the Word being with God and so on. Those kinds of phrases would have been things that the Greeks would have read and understood. Matthew's gospel, on the other hand, had genealogies which would have had great appeal to Jewish readers. Then we have, and we can't leave without talking about this, the Shepherd of Hermas, for example, is something that was in the early versions of the Bible. It was highly regarded. It was considered scripture by the early Christians, but it's gone. It was written about 88 AD as kind of a manual for new converts. The precise title is The Shepherd by Hermas. Hermas was the man's name. It was deleted from the Bible, not deleted as in rubbed out, but no longer considered canonical, by about the 3rd century. And the reason for that wasn't that it had some kind of heretical information, but if it wasn't written by an apostle, then it was not considered appropriate for the Bible. That way they could keep out heretical information from other sources. There's another one like this, the Didache, that is dated to about 90 AD. The title means Teachings of the 12 Apostles. It talks about baptism and the sacrament. It was also removed from the canonical list of the New Testament in about the 3rd century because who wrote it was somewhat uncertain. There are some other fascinating scriptures that are of special interest to Latter-day Saints. One is the Gospel of Thomas that was found as part of the Nag Hammadi Library in Egypt in 1946. It has genuine words of Jesus not found in the Bible. In the Gospel of Thomas, which is also, or excuse me, the Gospel of Philip, which is also part of the Nag Hammadi Library, Jesus is implied to be married. We also have in the Gospel of John, this is a different Gospel of John, the one in the Nag Hammadi Library, it talks about a heavenly mother. These are concepts that are very familiar to Latter-day Saints, but perhaps not so much to the rest of Christianity. Where did these changes happen? Why were these books taken out? Well, there were a number of controversies that happened that resulted in changes to the Bible, and there have been many, many changes to the Bible. Well, I hope this has helped give you just a little bit more information about where the Bible came from, how the earliest texts fit in with it. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.